Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch's sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Phase 0. We are back for another bonus episode on the road to Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm your host today, Jenna Anderson. I'm joined by Aaron Perrine.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Jamie Jurak.
Good morning.
And we had to bring him back for another Ryan Reynolds-related episode. He's back to discuss another movie, Charlie Ridgely.
I get to talk about a good movie this time. It's very fun. As much as I love bad movies, I'm excited to talk about something good.
The first class or the Origins episode that I missed and Charlie filled in on sounds so notorious. I'm glad we get to have a less spicy discussion today. So we're going to talk about the first Deadpool movie. We're like more than halfway through the Foxverse at this point, at least over the movies that we're covering for this lead up, which is kind of crazy in and of itself. But yeah, so we're going to talk about Deadpool, talk about how it holds up, various Easter eggs and stuff. We're going to give it a review score. But first, we have to do what we do on all of these episodes. We have to get a Jamie recap. I am very curious and excited to see how you're going to recap this.
I haven't given it a lot of thought. All I know is that it's going to be a challenge to keep it PG. But Aaron, I guess start the clock and let's get it going. Deadpool, Ryan Reynolds is back. Who thought that would ever happen? We start with an opening credit scene. That's not a real opening credit scene. It's just bit. And then we see Deadpool. He's in a taxi and he's on his way to a fight. And he's like, I got 12 bullets. And then he shoots a bunch of people and it's like, haha, he's here. And then he's like, all right, let's find out how I got into this situation. And then we find out Wade Wilson, he's kind of a gun for hire. He's beating up pizza men. You know, he's not a good guy, he likes to say. And he hangs out at this bar of bad people, you know, and all of a sudden he's there and they have this Deadpool and they're like, who's gonna die? And he's like, haha, that's a cool name. Maybe later we'll talk about it. And then he meets this really hot sex worker and he's like, I'm gonna pay you for 48 minutes of skee ball, and they hang out. But then all of a sudden, they do have sex for a year straight because they're in love, and things are going great. He proposes to her with a ring pop, and she says yes, but oh no, he has cancer. Things get dark, and she's like, we're gonna stick it out, and he's like, I don't want you to see me like this, and then he abandons her in the middle of the night because he meets somebody who's like, hey, do you want me to cure your cancer, and also you could be a superhero, and he's like, let's give it a try. So then he goes to this guy named Ajax, aka Francis, and it's all these experiments, he's getting experiments on it, and they're like, huh, and the whole point is like, hey, we're gonna like pull out a mutation from you, that's what we do here, it's very on the level, it's not on the level, things are shady, he gets put in this machine. He's not nice about Francis's name and he doesn't like that. So they're like, bah, 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 we hate you. And then he's like, rah! And then he's basically gets all melty, but he's invincible now. That's pretty cool. That's a cool thing. But he's a ball burnt to a crisp. He looks a certain way. Big fight ensues. Explosion. Whoa. And now he's like, I'm gonna go see, oh, Vanessa, that was her name. I'm gonna go see my girl, I love her. And then he's about to go see her and he's like, no, what if she doesn't love my new face? So he's like, I vow to find Francis and get my face fixed. And then he spends the next year killing people in various ways until he finds him. Cut to, we're back at the first place where he killed a bunch of people. He's got Francis now on the bridge and he's like, help me, Francis. And that is when two of the X-Men show up. It's Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead. And they're like, oh, come on, Deadpool, don't you want to be a good guy? And he's like, I don't want to be a good guy. And they're like, oh, you're killing us over here, man. Oh, no, Francis gets away. And he's like, oh, this is so frustrating. Can I just do what I need to do? But then Francis, he kidnaps Vanessa. Oh, no, that's so terrible. And Deadpool's like, I must get her back. And then he gets help from his X-Men buddies again. And then they walk in slow motion as they're going to defeat the bad guys, and they fight. Colossus has a fight with somebody. Deadpool fights Francis. Everybody's fighting, and then he saves the day. Yay! And then Vanessa sees his face, and she's like, that's okay, that's a face I would like to look at. And then they're like, oh, happily ever after. There's some other characters in the movie too, like he has a nice blind lady roommate, and some other things are going on. There's a bartender that won't show up again. And pretty much it's like, this is Deadpool now. What's in our future? We'll find out. The end.
Snaps for Jamie. That was amazing. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Perfect. You almost had it at the end. You almost made it very not PG at the end there.
I got so close, and then but we reined it in.
We appreciate it. All right. Well, so we'll let Jamie catch her breath. Charlie, just give your initial reaction to Deadpool. How do you feel about this movie all these years later?
My first thought about this when I was watching it, and I was thinking about how to talk about it, is that I'm going to have a really hard time, big challenge today, talking about this movie and not comparing it to Deadpool 2. Because a lot of my positive thoughts about this are directly in comparison to the movie that comes after it. I think that this movie does such a great job being its own story and being its own vibe. And I think we took for granted what this movie did in terms of like the quippy, fun, comedic nature of Deadpool, because it really got beat to death later on. Kind of like this was the original Suicide Squad trailer. And then they saw the reaction to the trailer and then they went way too far in the other direction with it. And this was like the original nugget of beauty that was made that we really actually wanted in the first place. And, I think Tim Miller, for as little as he's actually directed in live action, does an incredible job with this action in the movie. Some of it, there's a note you've got about the opening scene. It's very like the opening credits that Jamie talked about. They're not animated, but they're really like a CG fun kind of thing. But then when you get into the action, it gets really grounded and gritty. And it's a really, really wonderful balance of a human emotional story. Like this person that like, we don't necessarily want to be, but we are afraid to admit that sometimes we are and wrestle with his own humanity. Just kind of juxtaposed to like this ridiculous comedy and this bloody gore fest. It's a very, very unique comic movie that as there could be 100 Deadpool movies, but I don't think any of them are going to do what this one does because it did it, I think, so, so well.
Sick. for me, I guess it's such an interesting thing because I have this discussion with our good friend Spencer Perry, who does the comics pull list over here at comicbook.com, about how a lot of superhero parody now isn't really parody because you just become the thing that you're parodying. And I think that's what Charlie is nodding to when he's talking about Deadpool 2. The joke is not a joke anymore. And it happens with The Boys, in my opinion. It's like we are goofing on the tropes so hard that they become new tropes that stand right in place of the old ones. But back at 16, this was completely, you ain't never seen nothing like this on the big screen before. So it was just exhilarating. It was a hoot. I think the most classic thing I remember about this movie is that some poor grandparents brought their kid into the screening I went to of this movie. And when I tell you they left 8 minutes in, they left
that they lasted 8 minutes.
Yeah, I looked at my watch and was like, no way, it's only been like 5-10 minutes. I'm like, 8 minutes, yikes. And also when they sat down, I said to my now wife, like, I was like, oh, I ain't gonna be here for the entire movie, just wait for this. I don't think they watched the trailer for this one, and they didn't. So it's really kind of groundbreaking in the way it approaches these characters and the idea of superheroes, but also spawned a wave of interpretations on the material that aren't quite what this movie is. But it is
kind of like
good.
It's kind of like T-Pain. Like here's this wonderful thing that no one ever saw coming, and then everyone did it, and it just run into the ground. We're like, but T-Pain still rules.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
I think, yeah.
In pop culture, that's what we do. We're like, oh no, we're just gonna ride this thing. All right. Hey, look, it's Jenna. Jamie, have you caught your breath?
Yeah. I think I'll go in case Jenna needs a minute before we get to her opinions. Are you good?
Go.
Okay. Also go. I can't believe this movie got made, especially after Origins. It's just impressive in itself. There are things I really like about this movie. I think it's the best romance we've ever gotten in a Marvel movie. I love that about it. The action's good. It's funny, and for some reason, I don't laugh a lot watching this movie, and it should be my kind of humor. I like raunchy, like, kind of gross humor a lot. I've probably seen American Pie more than everyone listening to this podcast combined. And so, like, I like stuff like that. And but for some reason, this movie, there's, like, some kind of disconnect for me, and I really can't put my finger on what it is, but Ryan Reynolds is fantastic. Like, I cannot picture anyone else playing this role. He crushes it. It's he's never done anything quite as good as his performance in this movie. I think it's really great. Also, I get to watch this with Tony, who's the number one Colossus fan, and he just is like a giddy little boy every time Colossus comes on, and that's really fun to be around. So this is all the movies we watched so far I've watched very recently or watched very often. This I had not seen since Deadpool 2 came out. It's been a long time, so that was nice. Like this one I know not that well, so I enjoyed kind of getting my eyes back on it.
I agree with a lot of what has been said. I'm sorry, I blipped out a little bit because the eclipse is happening right now as we're recording, and I think it totally screwed up my Wi-Fi for a second. I'm so glad.
Jerry, you're like right in the path, right? Like you're yes. Pretty close. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So it like something happened there, but I'm back. I'm glad I'm not the only one with Charlie who dislikes Deadpool 2 and has problems with Deadpool 2. We will obviously get to that in our Deadpool 2 episode, but I feel like this movie is such a lightning in a bottle in so many different ways. I like Jamie said, I cannot believe it got made. I can't believe it got made in the way that it did. I thoroughly enjoy the emotional through line of this movie so much. I think that, like Jamie said, the relationship between Wade and Vanessa is unbelievable. And Marina Baccarin delivers such a fun performance. Like that really sells the movie for me. I had not rewatched this in the longest time outside of just seeing random clips on like TNT, just randomly airing in the middle of the movie. And there's some bits of the humor that do feel very dated for the time that it was made. As I said in my Letterboxd review, it feels like the kind of like Akin has cheeseburger kind of mentality that we had to some sort of jokes. But I still think by and large, there's a lot of this that really works and in a way that's kind of astonishing to see. So yeah, it sounds like we all are pretty positive about this movie, which is good. I'm very curious when we get into the number ranking, like where we will end up being. But yeah, we're going to take a quick 1 minute break. And when we come back, we're going to break down some Easter eggs, some comic book connections, kind of just our feelings about more specifics. So stay tuned.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Phase Zero. We are on the road to Deadpool and Wolverine, and we're going to break down the specifics of Deadpool 1. I tried my best to channel BD and take very thorough notes, which is not something I normally do when I watch a movie, but feel free, anyone, to kind of interject and offer your own notes. My first thing is, it is really refreshing how much this movie just kind of starts in media res. I'm a sucker for superhero movies in particular that kind of don't start with the traditional origin story and just start in the middle of the action and then work their way back. Like, Birds of Prey, The Suicide Squad, both of those do it really well. And it is still refreshing to see like how this movie kind of hits the ground running.
Yeah, it opens with like, I mean, you have the opening credit scene, but like the first within, what, 15 minutes, you're in arguably the best action scene of the whole movie, which, you know, you don't always want that to be the first thing you see, but there are a few things better than that 12 bullets thing to, like, hook you into a movie like this. Like, you hit the ground running 100%, and it's kind of impossible to, like, lose interest when you start at such a, like, high place.
I misremember, because I am kind of often on, like, your basic origin stories show movies, and I'm always just like, all right, here we go. And I forgot that this started out of order. And when it started, I was like, oh, because I totally misremembered that. And I'm like, because I feel like I have said in the past, like, I don't love the first Deadpool because it's just an origin story. And that wasn't really correct of me to say. That's why you rewatch things, people.
The 12 bullet scene is awesome. I do just need to say that. Aaron, go ahead.
I was going to say, I play a lot of video games, and I cannot tell you how many modern, or at least in air quotes, what used to be modern. So PS3, Xbox 360 era games start with a absolute loving sort of ripoff of this and like Max Payne. And so it's both like a novel device for these type of movies and a trope in of itself that hooks people who know what's going to happen in. It's not exactly Nathan Drake hanging out of a train, but it's pretty darn close.
Well, and to the point that I think Charlie was making earlier, like, this is Tim Miller's directorial debut. Like, he had done a lot of video games, if I'm not mistaken, beforehand, mm-hmm. and was kind of instrumental in the infamous test footage for this movie that leaked before it even became a reality. So, yeah, having that kind of video game sensibility, especially with something like the 12 bullet scene, like, it really shows, and it's so creative. And then it's interesting to see how other examples of the genre didn't necessarily hit the mark in the same way. I had forgotten to mention the box office and the general credits of the movie. So it was directed by Tim Miller. The script was by Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who then returned to do two and are returning to work on Deadpool and Wolverine. It made $783.1 million worldwide and $363 million domestic, with $152.2 million over a very long opening holiday weekend. It is still to this day the highest grossing X-Men film. So we will have to wait and see if Deadpool and Wolverine breaks that in any sort of way.
What was crazy was when Oppenheimer was, like, thriving, writing the article of Oppenheimer surpassing this as, like, one of the top rated R movies. Sometimes you just never know what's gonna happen. Like, I couldn't believe when I was like that I was writing that article.
I feel like no one in Hollywood could have predicted that, but it was definitely a momentous occasion when we got to that point.
And sadly, neither of those good movies is the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
I didn't want to say it, Charlie. I didn't want to bring it up.
I don't know which one is. It's just it's a sad thing that neither one of those are, is all I'm saying.
Well, I have a feeling some of us will be having that conversation later this week.
You know,
But yeah, going back to that opening, there are street signs for Steve Ditko, who co-created Spider-Man and kind of created the visual aesthetic that Deadpool's costume is sort of based on. Ed McGuinness, who is a comic book artist who worked on Deadpool, and Paul Wernick, who is one of the co-writers. I have this in my notes. This feels like the first of the X-Men movies to really be aware of and kind of responding to the superhero boom. Because it feels like even when we talked about Days of Future Past last week, it still felt like it was kind of being made in a bubble. Like, there are things that are obviously being done because the MCU was doing them at the time, but this feels like the first one that is actually cognizant of, like, the MCU is this juggernaut, let's acknowledge it in one way or another. Obviously 2 does it so much more, but it feels kind of apparent here.
Yeah, it was so interesting when you at the beginning of the show said we're about halfway through. That blew on. It's like, oh no, Deadpool's at the end. But that alludes to, like, how big in the, you know, the later 2010s the superhero boom really boomed. Because it was like, oh, we got all of the whole, you know, original X-Men series and some other stuff. And they reset it, and then Deadpool comes out. But it really is like the halfway point because there's so much to come later. And this does feel like a response to, like, the trajectory of where it's going. You know, kind of the, in 10 years, we had 10. In the next 5 years, we have 20 type of situation.
We're also at, like, the peak because there's only one left that's, like, really good. is the other thing.
Yeah.
We're about to go on a decline with one really good up for the rest of this. So...
Yeah. Well, so kind of talking about the MCU of it all, there's a Feige's Famous Pizza. That is the pizza company that of the scene when he's kind of antagonizing the pizza boy. I did not catch it initially, but I found it on an Easter egg list online. And it's crazy to go from like that level of a Kevin Feige Easter egg to like hearing them talk about Deadpool and Wolverine and how much they're going to be talking about Kevin Feige. Like, it is just going to be night and day going from those two extremes.
Like, Kevin Feige is going to be in that movie at this point. Like, we're going to see his face in the film.
He's going to be acknowledged very, very heavily, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they do that. I will also say I'm glad BD is not here, because I feel like we would be spending 10 minutes debating pineapple on pizza, because that has been a topic of contention in the comic book Slack and on meetings before.
It's not pineapple. It's pineapple with olive.
I know.
That's the problem.
I know.
I had a real visceral reaction to that.
I can like almost understand the logic, but it's just too gross. I would never try that.
Yeah, get the sweet and salty, but the olive is the wrong salty.
Yes, 1,000%.
Nighttime Slack is wild at comic book.
Yes,
dude.
Our food opinions are very strong at the later hours of the workday. And then I had completely forgotten about this. So in order to have Negasonic Teenage Warhead in this movie, Marvel and Fox did kind of a trade deal. I know we had talked about this with the Wolverine of like they couldn't technically say Madam Hydra because that was over at Marvel Studios. So for this, they could use Negasonic Teenage Warhead and mention her by name if Fox traded them the rights to Ego the Living Planet for Guardians 2. So it's kind of a crazy trade when you think about it. Both sides ultimately kind of benefited for it, but it's kind of crazy considering the two characters in question. Jamie's mind's blown.
I know, like, what a weird trade. Like, they're like, like you said, both winners, both utilized very well. But it's a wild thing to think about because they're just on very different levels in so many ways. I'm gonna need to sit with that one.
And it's kind of like I remember that happening, it being such a big deal at the time, but I completely forgotten about it until I was reading your rundown, Jenna, and like reading through your notes. Like, oh yeah, that was a thing, and you have to wonder like where James Gunn fit into that. Of like, Kevin said, "Hey, we've been approached by Fox here. Hey, all of our Marvel people, we can kind of get a character from them for something." And everyone's like, "Oh, what if we could do like here's all these big characters?" And James Gunn's like, "No, everyone, shut up. I need the planet guy. I need the living planet, and no one else will do. I already have Kurt Russell. You have to give it to me." Like this, just weird galaxy brain. Like only this character can work. Because I'm sure you could have gotten a lot of other people for this thing, and it's like, no, we're gonna pick the weirdest one that they have. And it's just, who knows how that worked out. But the idea of companies trading film rights characters like cards is really fun, also really horrible, and like the latest capitalistic stages of like everything. But like in concept, just giggling about it, it is a really fun, like seeing Kevin Feige, and I don't even know who was in charge at Fox at that point. Donner, Kimberg, I don't know who was like making
decisions.
Yeah, I
don't know who was the lead, actually.
After this, it was basically just Ryan Reynolds, but...
and Simon Kinberg on all of the X movies, but nice. Like even your point about like trading like cards, I feel like that would even happen with like DC stuff around this time of like the TV shows would want a certain character that the movies would be using. They would be like negotiating. It would be this like almost like a draft on like a whiteboard trying to figure out who characters could use. So.
And Gotham could not get Joker no matter how hard they tried.
No.
I'll give you this, and, you know, shrimp cocktail in your office every day. Absolutely not. We're not doing that.
Joaquin Phoenix called dibs. Go home, David Mazouz.
Oh,
everything sounds insane, but it's true.
I really miss this era of the comic book stuff. Like, MCU kind of felt like it was reaching its climax with Endgame and Infinity War, and Fox was doing everything. And like the whole CW verse was really just playing with borrowed time.
Yep.
Like they knew they were dead, but they had to do whatever they could. Like Gotham was on every drug. Just there was this whole era of complete unhinged insanity. And it was right when a lot of us started working at this full time.
Yep.
And I really, really miss the absurdity of like that half a decade we got of just utter clown behavior. From Greg all comic studios.
Greg Berlanti in a lifeboat, like, please come with me.
And Rose Leslie's like, kind of, wait, no, I'm leaving. I can't do this.
It's not a Charlie appearance without Gotham coming up in some form or fashion.
I did not realize I've done that twice now, but I have. So
between that and Slack, like you bring up Gotham at every available opportunity.
I have to. Someone has to keep pounding the drum, or absolutely. You know, it's going to go away.
But yeah, and then so the radioactive Sharpay line in the movie is a reference to a joke in Deadpool and Cable, because he says that he looks like Ryan Reynolds mixed with a radioactive Sharpay. So being a little self-aware there. I know Jamie has thoughts on this. I love that Wade is such a musical theater fan. I love like that he's wearing like Rent t-shirts. I love that he has like Bernadette Peters jokes. Like, I love that that is just a subplot that is not relevant to the movie in any way. Jamie, how do you feel?
I mean, everyone knows I love musicals. And when I clocked the Rent shirt, and I forgot. And I was like, he's wearing a Rent shirt. And then the Bernadette Peters, Bernadette Peters is one of the greatest voices of an entire generation. And who wouldn't love Bernadette Peters? I saw Bernadette Peters sing live when I was a teenager, and it changed my life. So wow. I respect what he's laying down, and it's nice to. And that is, I think, for me, the most relatable thing about Wade for me personally.
Well, so on a similar note, I have the same thing, but about George Michael, because I adore George Michael, and they didn't just like put a song in here; they like made it like a plot point.
Yeah.
A joke they called back to. Really interesting, though, that as I was looking at it, like thinking about it, 2016 was this crazy, like George Michael year. Obviously, December 2016, George Michael died. Mm-hmm. But that summer, two movies used George Michael as like a main joke thread / plot point. This and Keanu with Key and Peele. Keegan-Michael Key's whole character was like trying to fit in with like the gangsters and pretend he was all like intense, and they were in his minivan and they put on music and it was George Michael. He's like, y'all don't know about George Michael, and like breaks down fatherhood or father figure, and they all get singing, and there's like a George Michael video parody in it. And it's just crazy that both these things happened in the summer, and then ultimately George passed later that year, which really sucks. But hey, they went out without knowing it, like giving him all kinds of props in these movies. And it was wonderful to go revisit that watching this.
You know what's funny too is that he loves musical theater so much, and what we know about the movie that we've all been joking around about the entire podcast, wouldn't it be funny if Deadpool and Wolverine has all of these weird musical theater bits in it before Joaquin and them get a chance to do anything?
It'll technically be after, because a Joker comes out this fall. So no, Joker no. will be Joker will beat them to the Or no, wait, I forgot what time is. Oh my gosh, yeah, that movie doesn't
happen. I was like, wait, what?
The summer's like already here.
There is no sense of time anymore. But like, honestly, I would not be surprised if like part of getting Hugh Jackman back is like, hey, you can do a musical number. You can do like the one thing we never let you do as Wolverine.
I mean, they
before.
Already did Celine in the last, in Deadpool
like,
2.
We've joked about it since Jackman was like rumored to be coming back of like, oh, is he going to be on Broadway? Is there going to be some sort of like in-joke with that? I think you are onto something, Aaron. That could be great.
If I don't get it, I'm gonna be mad now.
Yeah,
I've also seen Hugh Jackman on Broadway. I saw Hugh Jackman in The Boy from Oz, and when I was like 15, and also life changing. You can do anything, and you have Hugh Jackman. The idea of like not doing that is crazy. It would be crazy. And I'm glad Reynolds not here because he's anti musical.
Like, Ryan Reynolds is in charge, basically. This is his baby through and through, and he loves that stuff so much and loves Hugh Jackman so much that it's like, is there a way they're like, why wouldn't they?
I also feel like with the MCU having Rogers the Musical, like just willingly putting that in as a plot point and then annoying everyone with the Hawkeye post-credit scene with it, I feel like they would, like, if you just went to Kevin Feige and were like, can we do a Broadway production of like a song, like they totally would. Yeah, Aaron, I think you're absolutely right. We're going to totally vindicate you if you end up being right in a couple months.
And if you're wrong, we're going to go burn it all down.
Yeah. when Aaron is right, that's going to be Aaron. That's the hardest I'm going to hit Aaron.
Oh no! My own destruction.
You need to, you just set yourself up for that. Oh my gosh. Man. You need to be prepared. Just wear football padding to the Deadpool premiere.
Wear your brown pants.
That's right.
Well, on the topic of Deadpool 3, this is such an innocuous line, and obviously it's of the time, but the line of like, I will find you in the next life got me thinking, are we maybe going to meet at the MCU version of Vanessa, and maybe that is somehow a plot point if we don't end up seeing the Deadpool universe Vanessa beyond just like the birthday party that's in the trailer? Like, do you think maybe that could happen?
It's very possible. I feel like he could meet 55 Vanessas in this movie.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Like the post credits of Deadpool 2, but he just goes to every universe and plucks its Vanessa and brings it to one place. And then he has all the Vanessas because that's a thing that Wade Wilson would do.
Only if one of them is a D'Onofrio.
I just want to see her in her comic persona, like with the costume, with the whole copycat vibe. Like that's just all I ask for. But yeah.
Speaking of Gotham, Marina Baccarin.
She's another so good example of why this era was so peak, because Marina Baccarin was in like multiple pieces of superhero media at the same time. Like it was so good. The torture scene in this movie is much darker than I had remembered. I know Jamie, like in her recap, was like, it's experimenting. I'm like, that was just torture. Like that was kind of nuts to see. I feel like very few things in superhero media have even like remotely gotten close to that since then. Like it was kind of just nuts. Then the Zamboni moment, I just have to acknowledge that is such a great joke. That is such a perfectly timed bit of him chasing the guy with the Zamboni. The Deadpool rap that is going while he is kind of in his training montage and getting all of his proto costumes and stuff is from the 2013 Deadpool video game, but they updated the lyrics to be relevant for the movie.
I was like, this is a bop. I forgot that, like I had no memory of that, and I was like, okay, yeah. I didn't know that was from a video game. That's interesting. Thank you for that education.
I completely forgot about the video game too. And then, yeah, just went down a rabbit hole. And it's like, oh yeah, that is how we had a full Deadpool rap, just like ready to go for the movie. So yeah, that's a little Easter egg for fans of the video game. Another one of my favorite jokes in the movie is Blind Al's IKEA furniture falling apart. It is just, that is so perfectly timed. Blind Al is just so excellent in this movie. Like
also Blind Al's in Fallout, Jenna. So you can look forward to that.
Hell yeah, awesome. And then there is a Blade 2 joke. I feel like we need to acknowledge that for Jamie's sake.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm surprised they didn't make a Blade 3 joke though. That would have been more on par with what this is, because Ryan Reynolds is in it and it's another not very good Ryan Reynolds movie, because Blade 2 rules. Blade 2 is the best Blade. It's
he was
awesome.
In three of like the worst comic book movies, and then they let him make this movie.
Yes, yeah. It like it's proof that you can just keep persisting, like, and eventually
nobody had a worse track record at making superhero movies than Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. Across multiple like studios and multiple franchises too, which is kind of just nuts. But yeah, I'm glad that he eventually, his luck definitely turned around.
I also did not know that Maximum Effort, the name of his company, came from how many times he said it in this movie. Yep. I didn't realize that this movie predated his company, and he said it so many times that I like I have to Google this. Does he say that in the comics a lot?
Nope.
It's just this movie thing. All right,
that was just kind of a movie thing, and then
It's kind of it also kind of tells the story of this like in two ways. It is very much the character, because when he says it, most of the time he is putting in the least amount of effort possible.
Yeah,
you know. But then on the other hand, like you think about everything that went into making this movie a reality, like how much more work had to go into this than like he put every other project on pause for a movie that might not have actually ever existed, but he couldn't let go of the vision for it. And so like, it is ridiculous. He put it in there so many times. But the more I watched it and watching it in retrospect, I was like, okay, I get it. I think it's excessive, but I get it.
Yeah. And then the Stan Lee cameo is in this movie. Stan Lee openly said time and time again that this was one of his favorite cameos to ever film, which is just kind of hilarious.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why. It's a mystery. But yeah, it's just very funny that until he died, he kept bringing up this one as one of his favorites. And then
that's not weird.
At all. And then the third act of this movie was kind of a point of contention, the setting of this third act, because it is set on a helicarrier, but it's supposedly not a SHIELD helicarrier. There were quotes from Tim Miller basically being like, oh, anyone could have had a helicarrier. Maybe it was AIM, maybe it was something else. Who knows? This is also, you know, as Agents of SHIELD was going on. So, of course, Jamie, we have to defer to you. How do you feel?
It didn't look like a familiar helicarrier to me. I didn't see it and go, I know that helicarrier. So, that's, you know, that's fine. It is what it is.
It is different enough, because when the trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine came out, there's a shot in the desert of a helicarrier on its side. And I was like, oh, that's the SHIELD helicarrier. And then someone else was like, well, maybe it's the one from the first Deadpool. So like I went back and pulled them both up, and it was not the one in the first Deadpool. It was much more resembled the actual Marvel helicarriers, because they can use those now. So it was a Hail Mary, but to Jamie's point, it was not the Hail Mary we were looking for in this movie.
Careful. Aaron, I saw you were having a reaction. How do you feel
Careful.
About that whole thing?
JK is going to make you write that.
I did write it, I think.
Wait, really?
I think.
Okay, cool.
We talked
so
about it. Someone wrote it.
So much was happening that Super Bowl Sunday. A lot
I
of
feel like I did.
Nothing. I remember SpongeBob.
Yeah.
I remember Patrick Mahomes winning it. Like, that was in this trailer, and that's it. It's funny how much tiptoeing used to have to occur. Like, so much weird tiptoeing around obvious things. Like, Jamie having to go, well, I mean, isn't that, how many helicarriers are there? Really? I've just seen this one. And that's literally what's going on in the decision-making rooms, too. It's like, I mean, it's close. You know, our bun doesn't have sesame seeds, so it's different. Like, that's what, like, literally half of these movies are built on back then. And this,
like, do y'all shop at Aldi?
Huh?
Do you shop at Aldi?
Yeah.
Like, you know the Aldi brand packages and how they look exactly like the regular pack, like 2AT, but there's just like one or two differences to make it not technically that. There's so much of that in this movie of just like, that's not Stouffer's, but like, it makes me think it's Stouffer's, you know? Yeah. That's not my helicarrier.
Stouffer's at home, you know.
Yeah. We have a helicarrier at home.
It just reminds me of the Simpsons joke of them drinking malk at school, not milk, malk with vitamin K. But yeah. And then in the third act, we get Bob the Hydra agent, who is a very unique character in and of himself. And then Bob's wife, who Wade talks about, is named Gail. And that is after Gail Simone, who wrote Deadpool. And then we have a post-credit scene in this movie. It is a very obvious homage of the Ferris Bueller post-credit scene, which is just kind of funny in hindsight, because in the MCU Reign of Marvel Studios book and in other interviews, Kevin Feige has been very open about the fact of that being the post-credit scene that kind of influenced the MCU having any. So I know Jamie liked it. How do you feel?
I love Ferris Bueller. I love John Hughes. And so I honestly, if we can do anything on this podcast, everyone listening to this podcast has seen Deadpool. But if you haven't seen Ferris Bueller, it is just, and I mean, you know, it's the greatest Chicago movie ever made.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jenna City over there. But it's just, it's such a good movie. And like, it's such a weird movie to have a post-credit scene. And I like that they acknowledge that. And I like that they're paying that homage. And then of course, like what, it's not just, that's not the only thing that makes us good. It's the fact that he teases Cable. And like, at the time, it was like, okay, buddy. But it happened.
I'm going to pull a BD of like, wow, can you imagine if we would get Cable in a movie? We'll just have to keep waiting and see what happens in that regard. To Charlie's point about this being the era when we all worked here, I started working here right around like the Cable casting rumors. And I have so much PTSD from that era, because it was like every week there was a new person in contention to potentially play Cable. And it was just
what's it, the fact that what's his name didn't get it still is like mine because of how much energy there was.
Uh-huh.
What's the Avatar guy? I don't remember
Stephen
his name.
Stephen Lang. Yeah.
There was some, and then there was an interview of like Ron Perlman from this week talking about, feel like it was, or maybe Instagram just gave it to me this week or something.
Uh-huh.
But it was a very recent interview of Perlman talking about wanting to have been Cable and losing to Josh, because he started losing all of his good roles to Josh Brolin. he was straight up like, if you see Josh Brolin in a thing, it should have been me.
Wow.
Like,
he would have crushed his Cable, to be fair.
Yeah.
He would have been great. But Perlman has that energy. If you've ever met Perlman, he is a like, that is Perlman. It's just like, oh no, I should have done that instead. And most of the time he's right.
Yeah.
But Cable couldn't have been hot if it was Perlman, like the way that they made it with, the way they did it with Brolin. So not taking away from Perlman, but I think the way they did it, you know. I think Brolin was the hottest option. That was also the most realistic Cable. So, you know, win-win.
My mind just went blank trying to imagine like Ron Perlman's Gurney Halleck. Like that would be insane. But yeah, Aaron, were you going to say something about that?
I was just going to say one of my like long shot things when this got announced and then you started talking about there being variants in it. I was like, I don't know if y'all seen Matthew Broderick lately after he was in that movie, that rom-com last year. I can't remember the name of it.
No Hard Feelings.
No Hard Feelings. Right. Yeah. Him as an old A. Wade in this next one would be hysterical.
And Matthew Broderick like, in any capacity would be great. Yeah. But that, I think, is the peak idea for a Broderick.
That would be super amazing.
And especially if they're doing a musical number.
I mean, listen, I too watch a lot of the Disney Renaissance movie. They're like, oh, look whose voice that is. Imagine that. Oh, man. You're just building Jamie's best version of this
movie. I was just going to say, Aaron, you are like hyping up this movie.
We're also ruining the movie for Jamie. We're ruining it for Jamie.
We're just creating a wish list.
It's going to come out. It's going to be a Sean Levy movie, and it's going to be disappointing, and Jamie's going to be really upset.
Because we
built it into something so cool. And it's like, oh, it's the Adam Project in theaters. And like, that's where we'll end up. But, you know.
It is sad that the confirmed musical is the one thing I'm not looking forward to. Like, that is not Monkey fair, Spa. Universe. The universe gives me a lot, though. I have to admit.
I mean, thank God for Lady Gaga, though. If it was anyone else, I'd be like, I have like zero interest. I'm at like 2% because of Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not much. It's not much, but it's at least something.
I'm just amazed at Charlie already having like such low expectations.
Listen,
it's like you heard it here first. Charlie hates Deadpool and Wolverine. You heard it here first.
After David Leitch, it's like bring back someone with some sense of style and purpose and vision, and then what if we just did David Leitch again, but with a different name? And so, I mean, but again, it's one of those things where you're not going to see like well orchestrated action in a Deadpool movie. You're going to watch Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman make fun of each other. And so it's going to be really fulfilling for that. You know, I'm sure of that. I'd be, if I walked out and it wasn't funny, I'd be like, this has to be one of the most enormous disasters ever made. I don't imagine that being the case. It's going to be hilarious, but
you heard
that,
it here first. Charlie hates Deadpool. Charlie hates Deadpool. Yeah. Does anyone else have any other notes or discussion topics to bring up?
I have one question for you guys. Watching it back, something I noticed was a lot of lines that got me that I do not remember. I think part of it, because Deadpool 2 was so much bigger in terms of all of the stuff that happens, I forgot about a lot of this movie, like Jamie was talking about. And so there were lines that got me this time that I did not remember, or even, maybe not the line, but the delivery of a line was so funny. Were there lines that stood out to you all this time around that like really popped you in a way that you don't remember like being funny or really recognizing the first time around?
You know what's funny? There's a line that really made me laugh hard. And I even turned to Tony and I was like, that was good. But I already forgot what it was. So that's
Foolish.
Like I no part of my brain remembers what that joke was. Wow. Now, 2 days later.
I'm gonna say the Zamboni scene, because like I knew I remembered it, but I didn't remember just exactly like how it was timed, and like it still was very, very funny to me. Aaron, what about you?
Anything involving Mr. Sony is funny as all get out, man. Like as a person who really, really loves Rush Hour 3, and it's not a great movie, but all the parts with the cab driver are hysterical. I was like, wow, does Ryan really just love this movie? Why is the cab driver in this, and why is he carrying such a funny load of what's happening? I don't understand. But I was really struck by that on the rewatch.
And so for me, that was everything with Negasonic Teenage Warhead. My two the two lines that I specifically wrote down were both responses to her. Because Brandon Hildebrand's delivery was so good that I think it really brought out some of the best of Ryan Reynolds. The one where she says, you got me in a box here, when he's like, silence or snarky comment, and just her like dead face, like,
yeah,
I got nothing, was perfect. And then the one I think we quoted a lot, the what in the ass at the end, when she says he's cool. It's a kind of a throwaway line, but I laughed really hard at it because it just, the different deliveries between Hildebrand and Reynolds and how well they fit together. And after watching this, I'm like, I really hope they found a way to put Hildebrand in Deadpool and Wolverine, because like that character was so, so perfectly done that I'd be sad if that was the last time we saw him.
I definitely agree with that. I will recommend, she had a Netflix show a couple years ago called Trinkets, and she's super great in it. So definitely recommend that. But yeah, we're going to take a quick 1 minute break. And when we come back, we're going to give our review scores out of 10. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Phase Zero. We are now in the third section of our Deadpool recap and review episode, which is to give it a review score out of 10. Charlie, you're at the top of the leaderboard, so unfortunately you have to go first.
That's okay. I'm gonna stick with where I've been with this movie. This one wasn't nearly as hard to grade as the other one that I've done. I've had this at 4 out of 5 stars from the get-go, and rewatching it last night, I think that I'm in the right place. So our grading score is 10, right? So 8, yeah. I think, is where I'm going to sit with Deadpool. I think it's, again, one of you said lightning in a bottle, and I can't remember which one. And
it was me. Yeah.
It was the best way to describe this movie. We'll never get one quite like it again. And it makes me appreciate it in a way that I don't think I ever have before. Again, being where we are now with not just superhero movies, but Wade Wilson on his own. It is just such a perfect little view back into a sweet spot of the genre. And so, 8 out of 10 for me. And I won't go the same like 5 years without rewatching it that I did this time around.
Jamie, what about you?
I will go that long again, I think. it's a 3.5 on Letterboxd for me, but a 7 feels kind of low. So I'm going to do the arbitrary none of this matters thing and bump it up to a 7.7.
Okay. Aaron?
I think I had like an 8.5. I don't know if I'm just riding high because Mania was so good yesterday and it puts you in a good frame of mind for like nostalgia, especially with everything that happened. But it's very funny. It spawned a mountain of imitators that do not do this as well as this first article does. And so for that, Deadpool definitely gets an 8.5. It was a lot of fun. More fun than I thought, for sure.
I, like Jamie, I already reviewed this on Letterboxd. I gave it a 4, but that an 8 itself feels way too low. So I'm going to bump it up to like an 8.2. Because I feel like, to the point that Aaron was just making, this is such a linchpin for the entirety of superhero media. Like, we didn't necessarily even know it at the time, but like, this is so reflective of where we were at that point and where we were about to go in the next couple of years. And on top of that, it is a lot more watchable than I had remembered. Like, there's a lot of it, despite certain things, that like still hold up in a really, really fun way. All right. So I've had my handy dandy calculator. So
like, Peter did the math for you.
Oh, mm-hmm. 8.1.
Yeah.
Awesome. So
for someone who's not on every episode, what's the highest we've gotten so far?
First Class was...
I imagine Origins was the lowest.
And no, I think X2 was the highest, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, it was one of those two.
You were tied, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We need to start making a graphic of like all of the scores thus far, mm-hmm. but yeah, it was definitely one of those two.
I think next y'all's next week, is it next week, might top it.
No.
Are you sure about that?
No.
Whatever the next one is. Okay. Logan's the one I'm talking about, yeah, very obviously.
Logan. No. Yeah. Next
Again,
week is Apocalypse.
8 movies in like 3 years. Like, yes.
It is. Trust me, it's very confusing to keep track of like when everything in this franchise was in relation to each other. But yeah, so next week is X-Men Apocalypse, as Charlie just teed up. So be sure to join us for that, because that'll
I'm sorry for teeing that up.
Wildly different episode. I'm excited for that one because I have not rewatched that movie since it came out in theaters, but that'll be a very, very interesting discussion. But yeah, Aaron, is there anything you want to leave the listeners with today?
It's at Summer Lake Horror on Twitter. I got a chance to speak to X-Men 97's composers and ask them fun questions like, so what does the 90s actually sound like? And they actually tried to give me an answer, which is great. That and trying to update the animated series theme without people coming to the house and burning their houses down. So you can see that on the Phase Zero YouTube channel. Thanks again, guys.
Awesome. Charlie, what about you?
I mean, I have nothing Marvel related, but we got Fallout coming out this week, and we've been doing a lot of work preparing for that. So I know, you know, Jamie's done a lot, like been a lot of good interviews from Chris. And then just a lot of us were kind of working behind the scenes for stuff for this weekend. So Fallout's a really great show. You should watch it. And check out our coverage. And also, Ryan Reynolds should have more like high top fade, flat tops, and long furry coats in movies, because I think that peaked his look. And I'm not sure he's gotten back to it yet. So, Ryan, if you're listening, I think you should get that coat out of the closet.
Just wear it to the Deadpool
premiere. I'll leave it with that. Yeah.
It was giving Macklemore, which I know was like a very reference of the time. But like, that was definitely the vibe. But he did pull it off.
I got Connor from it, too.
Yeah.
McGregor.
Yeah. Oh, I see. My brain also went to Connor for Real from Popstar, because he also wears that look like a dozen times. Because that's where my brain immediately goes, to Popstar. Jamie, what do you have to leave the listeners with today?
Got a lot of interviews that you can check out on the site. The director and the star of The First Omen, which is pretty good. My Civil War interview dropped today. Talking to Kirsten Dunst was like, I really had to compose myself. I'm going to the Fallout carpet tomorrow, so there'll be stuff for that. And then I'm doing Dead Boy Detectives later this week. So lots of business going on. And do not forget that when you're in the movie theater, don't have your phone out and don't talk to people. Thank you.
And definitely follow Jamie on social media, especially if you are an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. We'll just leave it there. Yeah. I am at Hey It's Jenna Lynn on social media. As always, go read some comics. If you really like Deadpool 1 and you want to kind of read some comics with this similar sort of energy, I highly recommend the Dead President storyline, which was by Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn, and anything Gail Simone has written for Deadpool. Both of those are very delightful starting points. Don't forget to follow the show at @PhaseZeroCB. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We will be back on Wednesday with a regularly scheduled show. And then Aaron and I have a spotlight episode that should be dropping later this week. We won't tell you anything more than that. You have to stay tuned for more details. But yeah, play the show for your mom, play the show for your dog, and thank you guys so much for joining us. We will see you next week with X-Men Apocalypse.